Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit betterhelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
Here's a cool fact. A crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Another cool fact, you can get short-term health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans are designed for people who are between jobs, coming off their parents' plan, or turning a side hustle into a full-time gig. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. Get more cool facts about UnitedHealthcare short-term plans at uh1.com.
Ciao.
Ciao, Bella. Coming to you from the Italian Riviera. I don't know if there is one.
Guess where I am?
Where are you?
Have I even told you? Puglia.
Oh, you're in Puglia. Gorgeous, gorgeous Puglia.
Where you recorded a fair few pods from once upon a time.
I was there when we interviewed Alexis Nyers, which I always forget that we did.
Same.
I find really funny.
I love that girl.
I know. I want to rewatch The Bling Ring.
It's really funny that we have all these interviews in the backlog that we've just forgotten ever happened. She's one of the main ones that I think was like the most hilarious get. But also just people, like I'll just see Evan Ross Katz posting stuff on Instagram and I'm like, oh, that's right. We had him on the pod. Or even Hayley Narman. I always read her Substack still and forget that we have had her on the pod.
Me too. She did a Substack the other day about personal style, which I only skimmed, but it was very interesting because she was basically saying that like everyone, the reigning wisdom is that to have good personal style, it needs to be consistent, but she thinks that that's a lie.
Yeah, I like that.
Because no one is consistent. It was very liberating.
Exactly. That's what I think my issue is I think that I'm always just like, I'll buy shit and then be like, wait, what even is that? Doesn't go with any. Yeah, I think that I don't have a specific consistent style. So I feel like I'm not stylish. But as you often will say, just buy what you like and then who fucking cares and put just random shit together. But I think it's just about knowing how to style pieces together is the main thing.
Yeah, and like it's consistently you if you're picking it when you like it, but we just overthink too much.
Yeah, I think I did a classic. I need to take a, what is the fucking saying, take a leaf out of my own book, but what's the one for like medicine, sip of my own medicine,
sip of your own.
With that, because I'm pretty sure I cancelled my subscription to her Substack, even though I love it. And then I was trying to get in the other day because she did a really good really good kind of teaser of someone being like, how much fighting in a long-term relationship is quote unquote normal.
Oh, a can of worms from Hayley.
She does really good Q&As, like answers people's stuff.
I think my problem with Substacks is I know the feeling. I unsubscribe. I go through periods because they just come in too often. They need to be like monthly. I'm like, I can't read all this once a week.
I know I have way too many newsletter subscriptions. And yeah, then I open my inbox in the morning and there's like 300 emails. And I'm like, get out of here.
Yes, leave me. And then you resent them. You're yeah. like, leave me alone. I'm busy. That's how I get Leandra Medine was one for some reason still.
Same. I never read it.
Neither. I understand theoretically the like recommendations clothes newsletter where you say, I wore this outfit. He's like in different, whatever, different price points or different things where you can buy it. But I'm always like, do people really do that? Obviously, yes.
Yeah, I guess so. But anyway, we should carry this on Patreon because last week on the Patreon, we were doing a deep dive into what to wear for summer, which is only relevant kind of if you're here in this hemisphere, but I guess it will be relevant to everyone else in like 6 months. But also so many people are going on Euro summer holidays and we started a long rambling chat about it, which needs to be finished. We've had some requests for summer sandals, of which I just bought a pair. And also I want to delve into summer or just in general wedding guest dress attire.
The never ending queue. I have some thoughts on that actually. I came close to buying something quite questionable yesterday as a wedding guest, but I left her behind.
I know, and we need to hear about wedding dresses. But we have to talk about desperately. Wait, what should we speak about first? We have to talk about, let's run you girls through the dog.
Yeah. And just like that, I think we should leave till the end, maybe. I feel like that will take up the majority of the episode.
Yeah, things take longer than we expect and then we have to go.
But should we go and just like that and talk about the submarine last if we can?
Well, let's talk about the submarine now and then and just like that. But then we have Glastonbury's chat.
Oh my God. It's just a full and bountiful list.
Let's talk about the submarine quickly. So anyone who's not across it can learn some things.
Can learn.
But I was like, dunno, not online. And I guess was just hearing about the submarine at the wedding.
I was very obsessed with this story, as was everyone, and then I was curious as to why I and the whole world was so obsessed with it. And I think it's just, it's a mixture of, I think it's almost everyone's worst nightmare in this like primal way to be like trapped in a tiny cage at the bottom of the ocean. There's just something so like sinister and terrifying about that. And the fact that there was this, there's X amount of oxygen left. Will they make it? Are we going to watch this thing happen? You know, it was, everyone was part of this horrific kind of movie-like plot line in real time. And yeah. Then the Titanic factor, I think, because everyone also is obsessed with the Titanic.
And the fact that they were billionaires.
Yes. I have to say, if I was a billionaire, I would spend $375,000 to see the Titanic, but I would not get in that fucking little tin can. You could not pay me. When I saw pictures of that thing, I was like, what? It looked like it had been made in the 1940s.
You're like, this ain't no private jet. This ain't no like Titanic style. Yeah, why did it look like that?
I kept thinking about, like, as we all are, big fan of Titanic, the movie. But James...
Yes.
Big fan. But, you know, he went down all the time in the 90s in these hyper-sophisticated looking sub things, like appears at the start of the movie. So I just thought, how is it possible that 25, 30 years on from that, this is what billionaires are taking on a tourism escapade?
Yeah, it's like we're 6 months away from AI like killing us all, but we haven't got a chic submarine yet. They're just like writing plot for And Just Like That season 3 instead of doing anything like worthwhile, like making cute submarines.
I mean, there's like a few things going on, obviously, in the sense that like there's weird billionaire eat the rich schadenfreude, I think, where people were being a bit too flippant and jovial about it on Twitter in a way that was gross. But at the same time, as you have mentioned in the doc, this was far more discussed than like a horrendous, heinous, far more fatal tragedy off the coast of Greece.
Yeah, on like the same day.
Fucking refugees. Yeah. Which no one heard about.
Yeah. And the Greek authorities just let them drown. Like they said that they literally said that they went up to see if they needed help. And the drowning people said, no, we want to carry on to Italy. And then they just left them and let them drown. Like it's fucking hideous.
That happens way more than any of us would like to think it does, especially in Europe. I was listening to my only news source, The Guardian, podcast about something like this. But they literally, that happens in the French-English Channel all the time. Mm-hmm. People in these like horrific human trafficking boats capsize. A lot of the time the people on the boats have like iPhones and they're close enough to the shore that they can call coast guards. And the coast guards on each country will ping pong back and forth and be like, it's not our problem, not our problem, not our problem. And they're literally people drowning in the ocean in like the dead of night.
Yeah.
It's horrendous. So that's a very fair critique.
Did you mean to say human trafficking when you said that?
What did I say?
You said human trafficking, but does that mean like refugees?
Yes. Yeah.
Okay.
I mean, I guess human trafficking is more for like, yeah.
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 Nice. Just checking. I was like,
human trafficking.
I was like, they're all being stolen as sex slaves, but they've still got their iPhones.
Yeah, probably. When you put it past them.
What else to say about the submarine? There's so many like think pieces coming out afterwards, which are really funny. Like just people being like, not think pieces, but you know how after a tragedy, just anyone wants any kind of story. Like I was reading this piece about someone who nearly went on it and then someone else who they were just like, I got offered a spot on it, but I said no. And then someone else who's been on one that and survived and then talked about that whole experience. And I was like, why do I care so much?
Yeah, there's something about the Titanic, obviously. The Titanic just continues to like loom large in all our lives and will forever.
The Titanic and Princess Diana's death.
Those are, yes, the two defining events of the last 500 years.
Literally.
But there's something about that idea that these super wealthy people died purely because the Titanic sank. There's something really kind of sinister and mystical about it. I don't know. Like I keep thinking about the bottom of the ocean floor and how it's got all that like creepy 1920s like plates and chandeliers and all of that stuff, and then these billionaires 100 years later going down to see
it. I fully
it.
Forgot as well that the star of the Titanic is that happening, which I know you just said, but I was just properly thinking about the scenes in my head.
Yeah. That's... Yeah, and you remember it's super high tech and big and like
but is that fake?
It's like a little spaceship. It must be, I guess, but James Cameron, the famous anecdote is that James Cameron did so many dives. He's like a nut about this deep sea exploration and was obsessed with the Titanic. And he said later he only pitched the movie because he just wanted to have an excuse to keep going down there more and more because he was obsessed with it. And he famously spent more time like exploring the Titanic than the people who were on the Titanic spent aboard the Titanic, because he's been down there 20 times or 30 times or something. So I'm like, the fact that he did that so long ago safely is just really confusing to me.
Something fishy. But
that this
about
was like
this.
A really scat weird.
It also feels weird that there hasn't been already a movie made about this going wrong. Why have we got so many rocket movies?
What, since last
no, where's Lifetime when you need them? No, like in general about a submarine disaster. There's so many plane disasters. There's so many like rocket disasters.
I think actually this is part of the curiosity is that none of us believe submarines exist. In my head, I'm like, what? Like, what is up with submarines? They're crazy. They're so scary and weird. Apparently, there's a movie coming out or just came out called The Iron Lung that has a really similar plot. And someone tweeted, this tweet was so funny. Someone tweeted, killer whales are capsizing yachts and four wealthy men voluntarily live-action role-played the plot of Iron Lung at 12,000 feet below sea level, seeking less than a porthole view of one of the most haunted wreckage sites in maritime history. The ocean's depths yearn for the rich and their possessions. It's true.
Yeah, it's like Little Mermaid.
Mother Nature wants to eat the rich.
Yeah. So what were you going to say? Would you go on the submarine?
In theory, it is something I would like to do more than like space travel, for example.
Really?
Like I'd be more interested in seeing the Titanic than seeing like, oh, actually, no, that's an insane thing to say. I'm more like drawn to deep sea diving than like outer space as a concept.
Yeah.
But I think I would freak out and not do it last minute.
I'm fucking so scared of the ocean. I'm such a baby. Mm-hmm. I never used to be. And then you realize how big and strong it is. And I feel like I'm such a weak swimmer for someone from New Zealand. I just don't know. One time I won the like freestyle competition, but it wasn't, the pool was widthways, not lengthways. So I just dived in and went underwater the whole way and then won. And I was like, I won, and I was so happy. And then my mum was like, yeah, all you did was fucking dive. Like, she just like
Donna
wouldn't let me off the hook because she was just like, shut the fuck up. You don't know how to swim. So I don't know. It's all quite scary to me. But I do love the ocean and its creatures. Like, I low-key love sharks and dolphins and fish and... But it's just scary. I think I'd like it's feel so really scary. Claustrophobic. I don't think I would even be able to dive, to do diving. Especially after listening to Case File.
Yeah. I was literally thinking the same thing.
Definitely not with a fresh husband.
Yes, it's not going to be on my honeymoon doing a deep sea dive. I'm terrified of the bends as well. I just know I'd get the bends.
What's the bends?
The bends is when you zoom up too fast and then you're like permanently fucked in the head for the rest of your life.
Yeah. Something would go wrong.
Not the exact kind of thing that would happen to me? Yes. Like, we'd all get back in the boat and I'd just be like...
Yeah.
I'd have the worst case of the bends ever recorded. Probably.
Yes.
A vegetable.
Yeah, I feel like, I just feel like my ears also get really sore when you go on planes and when you, things like that. Like when I skydove, I was like, oh, my ears need a pop, and was just like not being able to enjoy the fear or the pleasure of jumping out of a plane because my ears were hurting too bad.
I can't believe you skydove.
I can't believe it either. That's what I mean. I used to be so fearless. You've lived so many lives.
Mm-hmm. This is what I've always said. You have to skydive. You have to skydive, bungee jump, and live in New York before you're like 24.
Seriously, before you're like 22. As soon
as that prefrontal cortex kicks in.
Yeah. No. Yes, actually, yes. That's it. That's probably it. Now I'm like, I'm too old and scared to even learn how to surf. And I have like this other life where I feel like I would be really good at surfing, but I'm just like too scared. Even like the slightest wave, a tiny wave. I'm like, get me out of here.
It's funny because I really consider myself like not at all beachy. But then when I think about growing up in Perth, we would go to the beach after school. And the waves in Perth are really fucking crazy. And I just remember like getting caught in rips and having to be saved by lifesavers. I remember the shark alarm going off and there being like great whites out not that far from where we were swimming. And we'd all just get back in the water. We were so laissez-faire. And now... No.
Yeah, it's terrifying. All those waves are fucking scary where we live. Like, it's like you go out a little bit and then you have to keep diving under or you're going to get fucking, like, killed.
Snatched.
And then sometimes you dive under but you don't go under far enough and it tosses you around, and then you come up. This where we live is insane. And then you come up and you go to take a breath of air, but it's another wave and it knocks you under again. Like, that has happened to me so many times where I've just been like, I'm on death's door, like on Blue Crush.
Yes. And that's why I'm always like, how do people surf? Because when you surf, that happens, but you have this like extremely heavy thing tied to your body that like drags you further down or can like knock you around.
Well, that thing pulls you up though, because it floats.
Yeah.
Drags you further down. You're wearing like a boulder on your leg. That's kind of probably how they survive. But it makes it hard to dive under the waves because it's so...
Yes, that's what I... Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. My dad told me this story, and he is prone to exaggeration, but he told me a story that he was meant to go skydiving years and years and years ago in England, and that he like chickened out last minute, and two or three weeks later, it was probably like 2 years later, but the school he was going to do it at got shut down because they did a dive and someone dove into the propeller of a helicopter and died, obviously died. And the school got shut down, and it was like this huge legal case.
Oh my God.
Is that not the most harrowing story?
That's so crazy. Yeah, I'm so scared now. Anyway, we need to carry on. But I was just thinking the other day, like, even in cars sometimes, like, I'll just be in a car and I'm like, we could die any minute and we just act like this is all chill and fine. Like, so often you're in a car and someone then just like swerves or like slams on the brakes or like whatever. We're in Italy and like in Puglia, the roads are tiny and weird and it's dark and it's just like every second I feel like I could. Yeah. Anyway.
This is why you shouldn't learn to drive at 29 years old. Because you're so aware of how insane it is that you are allowed to be behind a like motorized half a ton vehicle that is a killing machine.
That's probably a good thing.
You're better off not knowing. You're better learning when you're young, I think.
Yeah, yeah, because then you actually do it. But I do think there are way too many people that are allowed licenses. Like, you need to chop those things up. And we should have to retest every, like, 10 years or something.
For sure.
Okay. Anyway, that's the end of the episode, girls. See you next week.
Bye. Okay, I've been watching And Just Like That today, and I was watching it on the couch at like 11 a.m. and I just thought, I love my life.
I know. Grace often puts her phone on Do Not Disturb, and then I have like a breakdown because only one tick happens and it like does things to my brain where I'm like, maybe she won't look at her phone again forever. So anyway, I emailed her, Instagrammed her and texted her, and she was just watching And Just Like That on the couch. You are so funny though. I do think that's one of your like most endearing, coolest, like genuinely coolest traits. I was speaking to Amara about it over Amara and Will about it over lunch. I was like, she just doesn't look at her phone in like such a like insanely cool and what is the word where you want to be the person like thing way. And I was saying that like the other day I text you and was like, oh, maybe don't come run now because there's builders playing that techno version of like push me and then just touch me so I can get some satisfaction. And then you like she doesn't look at her phone at all. It's been like 45 minutes. The text hasn't sent. And I was like, oh, I guess it just doesn't matter if she comes around or not. And then I look out the window and you're just like wandering down the street, like slowly walking down the street towards me. And I was like, it's so crazy to me that like you can walk 20 minutes from your house to mine and you don't have like the thought to look at your phone. Like, I love it. I sound like I'm talking shit, but I'm genuinely like, that is so fucking cool.
It just gives me too much anxiety. It's just a coping mechanism to deal with this horrible world. I was looking at a TikTok the other day where people were talking about like how people lived before phones and like how they made plans and stuff, and you'd like make a plan and you'd say, let's meet, which we remember because when we were in high school we didn't, maybe you had like a Nokia brick to text, but text costs money, so you'd literally be like, I will be at the movies at 3 p.m and then you'd just stand around and wait if someone was late. And I was like, those were the glory days. I love that. That's all you really need bring back a landline.
Yeah, I'm way too, like, me and Amar are way too available on our phones. Like, it's like I just constantly am on, which I think I've gone so far with it that it makes me feel really stressed if I'm not on it because of anxiety. Like, the other day when we got locked out of our Airbnb on Friday, we were in Naples and I was like having a full breakdown because I was getting my period and it was like that day. And we went out at 10 in the morning and then couldn't get back into our Airbnb until 6 p.m. And I literally had like thought up every example of, I guess it's different when you have it on you and you're choosing not to touch it. But I thought up every different example of like various people having died by the time I got to my phone or just work stuff, like anything. I'm like, anything could have bloody happened.
Yes. I think I read Jaron Lanier, that guy's book about 10 reasons to break up with your phone. And that was quite life-changing for me. And he didn't really say anything that we don't know, but it just the way he spelled it out and the way that like those things you're talking about is almost like it's planted in our brain, the anxiety of being off our phones to keep us addicted to it. And then you just like, if you just did one weekend where you turned your phone off and put it in a drawer for the weekend and like told, you know what I mean? Told key people, whatever, you feel so anxious for the first day and then the second day you're kind of like thing and then you turn on your phone and nothing's happened and you're like, wow, this is, we are all just in this like mass psychosis.
I think it's that thing of everyone needing to be in the same wavelength with it because it's like what will happen is because I assume you're going to be on your phone like I'm on my phone, then I'll contact you about work stuff like kind of urgently in like a scat annoying way. And then you like, you know what I mean? Like I marked up the time for this podcast recording because I am ADD and can't work out time zones. And then I'm like, oh God, I desperately need to get in touch with her, but I know that she won't be on her phone. But then it's like, if we just, it's things like if you didn't have a phone, we would have just organized the time for this call days ago. And I would have had to be like, okay, well, I have this, this and this. So it has to be this time and that's that. And then actually life is so much more chill.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. But you're like, you're 100% right because people do now expect you to respond straight away. And you do get like, if you don't respond to an email, people chase you up on WhatsApp 2 hours later. And people do need answers to stuff extremely quickly. Like it's not all in our heads. It is the reality we live in now. But you can just slowly make people realize that you're not reliable.
Yeah, exactly.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Wow!
Nice!
Yeah!
What you're hearing are the sounds of people everywhere putting on Bombas socks, underwear, and T-shirts made from absurdly soft materials that feel like plush clouds. Yeah, that plush. And the best part? For every item you purchase, Bombas donates another to someone facing homelessness.
Bombas. Big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST, code ACAST.
I know everyone shits on it and it's like our guilty watch that we hate watch or whatever, blah, blah, blah. When I was watching it, I just thought, I'm really glad this exists and that I can watch it. But the writing is bonkers. Some of it is like, it really is crazy, some of the dialogue that's in there for a show that could get like, I don't want to shit on the writers specifically, but just for a show where like anyone in the world would want to write on it. And where the original was so good and funny and sharp and quick and clever. I just find some of the scenes like mind-boggling.
I mean, I agree with you. I think that's the thing about it is it's like people shit on it because it's not as good as the original Sex and the City. And then they do all that awkward like whatever. trying to be woke stuff, which is really fucking cringe. But then I agree. I just loved watching it. I was watching it just now in a little restaurant with my iPhone out. And it was an Elton John remix of Tiny Dancer and all the women walking in to like fuck their husbands on the bed. And I was like, I love this show.
Yes. I love that they go to the Met Gala. Like, I just love the fantasy. They've done such a good job of like taking the original thing of it being like a fantasy and doing that for now. Mm. You know what I mean? Like, it's ludicrous that these four women would be going to the Met Gala. Like, it's just bizarre. But they're getting like couture Valentino made bespoke. Like, it's, I just love it. It's just fab and silly and camp and ridiculous and really fun to watch. And some of it is. Some of it is really funny. Anthony's lines were all really funny.
Yes, I agree. I loved Miranda in the sensory deprivation tank because those things fucking suck. Have you been in one?
I don't think I could hack one of those.
It's like me wearing these AirPods right now. It was hell on earth because it was like you have to put earbuds in because the salt. I don't know. I was like, this is stressful, man. Like the salt is... The water is so salty to keep you buoyant. And then the thing you close and you're all naked, which is like already confronting enough as it is, floating around in this little bubble. And then the ear things keep falling out. So you're like, well, salt's getting in my ears and now I'm going to die. But I need to be chill and relaxed and should be like meditating. Yeah. But I'm just thinking about all the salt in my ears.
You saying that, yeah, fills me with anxiety. I would not be relaxed.
Yeah.
The actresses are doing such a great job. Like, they're just doing their darndest. Like, SJP, I just love her. I love Cynthia Nixon. I love all of them. And all the new actresses are amazing. Like, everyone is fantastic. It's just... That conversation with Carrie and the guy on the bed in the opening 10 minutes where she was like, I'm going to try to cook. And he's like, oh. No, he's like, I like cooking shows. And she's like, oh, I can't cook. And he says, oh, I like to cook. And then she says, sometimes I cook salmon. And he goes, salmon. That sounds... I was like, what is this conversation? This is literally crazy. And she goes, I might learn to poach an egg.
And didn't he say, is salmon hard? I was like, have you never cooked salmon when you say you like to cook?
It was, there was no like chemistry, no subtext.
I was like, who is this guy? I forgot who the fuck that was.
I was like, everything about this... is so random. Like, Carrie's like sassy. She's got the one-liner. She's quick. She's funny. She's a writer. She's like, I was like, what is this chat that never went anywhere?
I fucking love Sarah Jessica Parker. Same. So then I read the big piece on her. What even was that? New York Magazine.
New Yorker, I think.
New Yorker. Yeah. Read the big piece on her, which was such an incredible profile. Started with her working in her SJP collection store, which is coincidentally, she says, on like on the exact bus route for the Sex and the City tour. So people on the bus tour like can get off and buy her shoes. And she was just like, that was just the cheapest real estate, whatever.
Tell the truth, Sarah.
Yes. And she works in the store once a week and literally helps people try shoes on.
And that's true, because if a girl I know recently walked in and she was there and she helped her pick a pair of shoes and got photos with her and was like the nicest, completely organically.
Why the fuck did I not know this when I last went to New York? That
I
is
don't
crazy.
Know what day it is. Yeah.
Well, I would go every day.
Every day till she arrives, all day.
Yeah. So, and then it talks about, I don't know, it was just cool because it's that weird thing of like being a fan of someone for ages. And then I was reading this profile and I was like, I actually know nothing about this woman. And I feel like I've never read a profile into her life in depth. Like, I knew she was a Broadway girl, but I just didn't know her backstory of like how much of an incredible Broadway actress she was. And that she dated Robert Downey Jr. for 7 years. I did not know. That went completely over my head.
Mm-hmm. And JFK Jr.
And JFK Jr. What the fuck?
She's fucking iconic. She's literally so iconic. She's so important.
In the summer of 1991, Parker met John F. Kennedy Jr. at the theater. She's so chic. She also, just the way she was so like chic on Broadway, and she said that TV was underneath her mum, so she didn't want to tell her mum that she was like going for Sex and the City. But then also the way that, what I love about her is she's this incredible Broadway actor, like really well respected in the industry, does Sex and the City, it blows up. She continues to do Broadway shows. And she was just like, I'm a working actor. Some things I do will be successful and others won't. And that's always what I expected out of my career. She just seems really down to earth and kind of got her head on her for someone with like the levels of fame she has. It feels like she just has no ego in that way.
Yes. And I think people, this happens a lot. Like, I didn't know Cynthia Nixon as well is like a Broadway girly, serious actress, like hugely talented. Kim Cattrall, obviously all of them. We watch Sex and the City and think it's this fun, just kind of silly, girly show. And they're all like incredibly talented, like actors who put so much thought and energy into their performances. And that's why the end result is so good. But you just, that's all happening like beneath the surface. Like, you know, the stories about how Sarah Jessica Parker would stay in her heels, like go like method with Carrie and like not change out of her heels between takes and whatever. I love that stuff.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. They're actually really incredible actors. Yeah. I think that's the thing about it, is you think it's like frivolous and silly, and then you look at their acting and you're just like, you guys are so fucking spot on. So what they say in this piece as well. She said that she remembers her husband Matthew reading their Sex and the City script and saying, if you do this, you might become too famous, because they loved being just like that normal level of respected Broadway actor. So fucking cool. Mm-hmm. So she said, yeah, part of what persuaded her was the strength of the pilot script, the last scene in particular, which is when Mr. Big gives her a ride home in his car and she gets out and taps on the window and asks, have you ever been in love? And he answers with a grin, abso-fucking-lutely. And she said that Parker saw in it all these possibilities. She said, it's New York, it's this girl. About like watching him drive away. And and then it talks about how she's this incredible comedian as well, and how the thing for that kind of encompasses Carrie Bradshaw is her falling. So you know how she, in the intro sequence, she wobbles and kind of falls in the tutu as a bus splashes her with gutter water, and in the series she like falls into a mud pit at a country cabin, and then she skids belly first across a Dior boutique, and then in the episode where she's strutting down the fashion show, and she falls and wipes out, and Stanford screams she's fashion roadkill. And she she obviously does that herself, but that's her actually fully falling and like injuring herself. And then they say in this piece, like Tom Cruise, who does his own stunts for Mission Impossible, Parker welcomes the physical effort of embodying Carrie. Could Cruise run several blocks in Louboutin mules? For one such scene of Sex in the City, Parker refused the offer of a body double. You have to remember, I was a ballet dancer. I've got bad stuff all over my feet now. Huge marks and bumps, but it's a badge of honor.
Oh, I love it. And it's true. She did do all her own stunts.
Yeah.
Special girly. Yeah. Love it. Love her. Yeah. She's like, people are right to say that Kim Cattrall's Samantha was a huge amount of like glue that held the show together in a lot of ways. That's definitely true. And you feel her absence a lot in And Just Like That, but Sarah Jessica Parker is like just such a star. Like every time she's on screen, I just can't look away from her. I could just watch her like sit and read a magazine for 40 minutes. She just created one of the most iconic characters of all time with Carrie. And I think I was thinking watching it today how a big critique is people are saying like this show's ruined the legacy of the show because these characters are nothing like they were in the original series. But I think there's something, because I know that Sarah Jessica Parker and Cynthia Nixon and Kristen Davis are all so smart, I think there's something kind of amazing about that in a way, because I think you do change. You're not going to be the same like vivacious, fun, loving, outgoing, partying thing person that you were in your late 20s and early 30s in your mid 50s. And like you do mellow out and become quieter or different, or I don't know. I just think that there's something kind of cool about the way the characters have changed.
Yeah, I agree. I also think what's cool about it is that despite them having all of these careers beyond Sex and the City, that they don't want to, that all of them don't try and be like, oh, that was just the embarrassing thing we did in our past, or we're serious actors now, and like trying to escape the franchise. And I love that Sarah Jessica Parker's never felt like she was too good to be known for Carrie Bradshaw. She's always embraced how important that was for her fans. But she also said that she doesn't watch herself on screen and to this day hasn't seen many Sex and the City episodes.
Wow. I do kind of get that. It's like how I feel. We feel listening to our voices back. It would be even worse with your face. But if I was SJP, I would be rewatching that shit all the time just for how hot she looked.
I know.
In those episodes.
She still looks so fucking hot. She's so fucking hot.
She looks phenomenal, like just gorgeous. There was actually an interview Kristen Davis did talking about her fillers from last season and how much shit she got. And this is an interesting can of worms. She's like a literal sweetheart. She seems really similar to Charlotte. And she just said, you know, it's like a really hard one because I knew everyone in Hollywood got work done and I knew we were doing this show and people are like accustomed to seeing me looking a certain way. So I kind of just went to the doctor and got this shit done because I didn't know. I just had no idea. And she said something like, none of my friends told me, like no one told me it didn't look good before I started filming. And like, I kind of wish someone had now. And I was just thinking like, that's such an interesting thing because you kind of, if she literally didn't know and she, you know, everyone kind of talked about it, just, it looked slightly uncanny and uncomfortable to look at because it looked like she'd just gone and suddenly got a bunch of work done. Like, do your friends have an obligation to tell you?
I know. I think that all the time because I also think it's such like a slipping slide with that sort of stuff. That people will get something done, like the smallest thing or whatever, got their lips done like a bit. And then it's like, obviously you get used to that over time and you start to think that's normal. And it could just be like the tiniest amount that like is normal and you like not noticeable. And obviously there are different, whatever, people can like get really big, like we fucking love Chloe Cherry, like get really big lips if like that's the look you want. But I know these people are wanting to look natural, like they haven't had anything done. And then they'll get a little bit more and then a little bit more because you're getting used to what the new normal is. It's like COVID. And then you just start to look crazy. And it's like, when is someone going to, what is your duty as a friend to be like, oh, like it'd be such a hard conversation to be like, oh, it looks like you're getting a bit too much. Or I don't know.
That's what I mean. It's this is why these super direct people that are abrasive are great to have around. Everyone needs at least one friend like that who'll just give it to them straight from a place of love. Because the problem is the people that you're closest enough to be that honest with are not that many because you need to hear it from someone who you 100% are like, they're saying this because they've got my back and I know that they love me and they're not being a dick.
Yeah.
But you also, the problem is you do that shit from a place of insecurity. And if you're doing something from a place of insecurity, you're not going to be like, what do you think? Like, oh my God, what do you think? Like you're going to be discreet about it and hide it. So as a friend, if someone hasn't given you the in to put your opinion in, you're not going to just do it unprompted.
Yeah.
But then that's like how this shit happens.
Yeah. Like I had someone saying to me the other day, like it's just so obvious that she has quite a lot of work done and she's like really open about it. Like she's not hiding it, but she thinks that if she didn't tell me, I wouldn't know. And then I was just like, and then my boyfriend was like, she has had so much work done. Like it's so obvious. And I was like, oh, because obviously he just takes him like so much to pick up on anything. He literally said to me once that like, you can tell fake boobs from a mile away because he saw someone with like double E, like Geordie Shore fake tits. And I was like, dude, like half my friends have fucking fake tits. Like, and they're like chic C cups. Like half the girlies walking around with no bra on have fake tits. And like, they look amazing. It's just, you're noticing the really extreme examples. So yeah, promised, swear on the podcast, always have each other's backs if we start getting crazy facelifts.
100%. It's I've just really felt for her.
Yeah.
When she was saying that, because I was just like, it's, she wasn't saying it like she blamed her friends or anything. She just said that comment in passing. But she was just saying like all of a sudden everyone online is saying something that no one in my life has said to me at all, you know? And like, that's a very weird disconnect.
Yeah.
That to know everyone around you thought that way.
You know Kim Cattrall's coming back, right?
Yes.
So
yes, I do.
Kim Cattrall's coming back for like a scene and Variety. So this is interesting. This is what I just got from the New Yorker piece. Variety linked the news she'll be returning in the season 2 finale for a phone conversation scene that she'd filmed without seeing or speaking with any of her co-stars. The tabloids scoured the story for evidence. As in the past, Parker has practiced a tight-lipped diplomacy. Like, it's the weirdest thing to be told we're in a cat fight. Her, like, classic line. And then she said Michael Patrick King begged her not to discuss the Cattrall cameo in this piece, but she did admit, I am in the scene.
Oh.
She's in the scene. So it's not, like, some cop-out where Kim Cattrall's not with the other girl. She's, like, in the scene.
Ah.
Yeah.
That's exciting. This is, like, when you read something like this profile on SJP and, like, anyone who I know who has interacted with her in any way, like, not as a journalist interviewing her, like, as a person who's basically been in one of her pop-up shops and talked to her. And I understand she's literally selling a product, so she's putting on a thing. But she just, everything about her seems so cool and low-key and normal and, like, dare I say nice. We don't know these people, but, like, she gets on so well with everyone else in the cast. She's never, like, and she did say that at the time with the thing. She just said no one, like, it's just not part of her career since she was a child to have any beef or issues with anyone. That I also love and am obsessed with Kim Cattrall. And I just feel like there's this weird miscommunication at the heart of this whole thing.
Yeah.
And I want to go in and solve it. Just want the girls to get on again.
I know.
I want to be their friendship therapist.
I know. Yeah, they talked in the piece, which is, I basically pasted this entire interaction, that this woman walked in to the shop and asked for a UK size 7. And then Sarah Jessica Parker was like, don't worry, I can do the conversions. If you have the patience, we have the time. And then she went and disappeared into the basement and returned with a size 40. Girls, the podcast girlie's shoe size. This is like triggering. Then she squatted down in front of this woman. And then she goes to Sarah, she goes, you shouldn't have to struggle this hard, she said, as she tried to coax the shoe over Hugh Gill's heel. And then I'm like, that's me in like every single shop, being like, I'm a size 40, 40, 40,
I'm a 40, 40, 40.
40. Parker leaped up, pivoted around, leaving a little swirl in a pile of carpet. And then minutes later, she returned with a stack of boxes and a size 41.
She's rustling around for a 41. She's trying to do it politely.
The last big girl size in the shop. And then, yeah, anyway, she put the shoe on and it fit. And then this woman said that was maybe the best customer service I've ever had.
Oh, God. She has put on a show for The New Yorker and The New Yorker has lapped it up.
I know. But this is really funny as well. She took her to the ballet. They hung out so much. But Sarah Jessica Parker refused to let them hang out at her house because she was like, I just don't bring my kids or my husband into it. But they went to the ballet and she was just like, what does one wear to the ballet with like fucking Carrie Bradshaw? So she wore this blue gown and then she was meeting Sarah Jessica Parker beforehand and she walked into like the restaurant wherever she was meeting her and SJP was wearing jeans and a button down shirt and then kept telling her how pretty she looked.
Sarah Jessica Parker is just that woman who just knows exactly how to dress for exactly every single thing, don't you think? Like, I just think that she's the person you would just, whatever she was wearing in a situation, you'd be like, oh, I wish I was wearing that.
Yeah.
So as then in, she as goes, in that situation.
So then a fan came over and she's talking to this fan. And then she goes, you looked beautiful. I noticed you right away, she said to the woman who was putting on a fur coat. Then pointing to me, she added, can you believe how nicely she's dressed for the ballet?
Stop. Maybe she's a queen of passive aggression and that's why Kim Cattrall.
Like with that, I was just like, that's such a funny thing to put in the piece. Like, what are you saying? What are you saying with this?
What are you saying with this? Yes.
To unpack
it's
that.
Very true. Okay, so on to another great profile about the and just like that season 2. Sarah Ramirez was interviewed for The Cut and just makes for the most iconic reading. It's so fascinating. This like huge gaping generational gap on the topic of like queer inclusion and pride that's taking place on And Just Like That.
I know. Yeah, what I found funny about this piece was like Sarah Ramirez being super adamant that they're acting in And Just Like That and Just Like That isn't based off them. And then the writer kept pulling out like the really funny shit, like being like, Shay Diaz introduces himself in the first episode of Just Like That as a queer non-binary Mexican-Irish diva. And then they go, quoting Sarah Ramirez, "I'm an actor. I'm not the characters I play. I'm not Shay Diaz." For the record, Ramirez's Instagram bio describes themselves as abolitionist and a Mexican-Irish non-binary human.
Abolitionist is so... It's just so cursed. It's so, like, trapped in 2020 energy. Like, nuts. What I loved about this is, I think... So there was this huge backlash, kind of tongue-in-cheek backlash to the Shay Diaz character. And you wondered how aware of that Sarah Ramirez was and like what they made of it and if they knew about it and if it's this character creation or whatever. And then you read this piece and just realize that they have no understanding of what the backlash is and where it's coming from. And they kind of both, Sarah and Cynthia Nixon, both kind of write it off as being like queer phobia. And they like the people they think are criticizing Shay Diaz is like the complete opposite of who he is. And what is the writer's line that is really, really funny?
The lame thing. Oh.
Yeah.
Back in the park, Ramirez waves away the side eyes about Shay, saying anyone who benefits from patriarchy is going to have a problem with Shay Diaz. When I try to tell Nixon some of my own mixed feelings, she asks, like a therapist, "Do you want to unpack that to me?" Both actors seem to believe their action has more to do with societal discomfort around gender non-conforming people rather than a hope coming from actual queer people that we would be portrayed as less lame. I love this piece. Why am I not a brave writer like this person?
It is so good. It's so, just like perfectly captured. And it makes the show more iconic in many ways. Like this chaotic, because in this piece, one of the writers says, and I have no doubt this is true, that there's a bunch of young, very cool, very talented writers who are working on this show. And the writer said something like, "We find it really uncharitable that the fans who roast Shay Diaz don't think we're in on the joke. Like, we're in on the joke. We are contributing to Shay being this specific character." But then when you're watching it, you're like, well, it doesn't feel like the show's in on the joke because I can never figure out what we're supposed to think of Shay from the show's perspective. Because it sounded like from Michael Patrick King or whatever his name is, when he went on Evan Ross Katz's podcast, that he was saying that it was meant to be this great romantic love story that the viewers were meant to fully get on board with and be so excited for Miranda. But then Shay always treats Miranda like absolute garbage.
Yes.
And their interactions are really strange. Like, Shay will be really mean and then they'll end up having a little hug. Like the...
Shay's where she said that thing boy. Of...
Yeah. Where there's that scene... where Shay's being really like mean to Miranda and then says, "I'm on a diet and I'm really ashamed of it. And I am feeling really bad about myself because of something they said to me in the wardrobe." And then Miranda hugs them. And then I was like, what is the tone of this scene? Is it meant to be, are we like are really empathizing with Shay in this? Do we think Miranda's stuck in a toxic relationship?
Yeah.
Like what is, it's confusing. So I don't really think the show is in on the joke. In the way that the writers say they are.
Yeah, or like I couldn't understand. I was like, I don't really understand what's going on when Miranda was like, Miranda was like trying to put that strap on, which like let's just not even go
loved
there.
Yeah.
And then Shay was just, then Miranda was like, gave up on that idea and then was like, "Let's get dinner and go to your show tonight." And Shay was all like cagey about that and was like, "No, I haven't like worked out my set stuff." And I was like, "Oh, are you just joking about Miranda? Did that happen? I just feel like maybe I zoned out. No.
Yeah, that's what I thought, but it didn't show that.
Yeah, it didn't
show that.
And then
Miranda does go to the show.
Yeah, and then it was just fine.
And Shay's like, don't hug me, I'm at work.
Yeah.
I was like, this is like a borderline emotionally abusive relationship. I'm so confused. Bring back Steve. Who would have
thought? And also, like, obviously, we're not going to fucking be super on board with Shay and Miranda when Miranda was such a cunt to Steve, who we fucking love.
Poor deaf Steve. Poor beleaguered Steve. Exactly. So it's interesting to watch that unfold. I need to bring out a line of dialogue which really killed me.
Please.
Carrie doing her podcast, which is called Sex and the City. And that guy who every time I see him, I'm like, who are you again? And then I'm like, oh, wait. Okay, yeah, he's a love interest and he works at her podcast. Like, I just was like, who is he? And then she gets a call in and they say, we're in this weird relationship place. And she goes, first of all, relationship place is a great name for a restaurant. What?
Yes.
What? Am I like missing a meaning on that? That is the craziest sentence that's ever appeared in a show. And then they reference it again later. The boyfriend's like, oh, we better not go to the relationship place restaurant.
Like, oh my God.
What am I missing? I don't like Sarah Jessica Parker, gorgeous, talented actress.
Broadway star.
Seeing that in the script. Broadway star. First of all, Relationship Place is a great name for a restaurant. It isn't. In any realm. Like, I don't.
We have to name our podcast episode that.
And then the next one, bartender. I'll have what she's reading. What?
Oh my God, yeah. Wait, what's going on? I couldn't remember what's going on with Thingy and her husband. What is going on there? He's off like in a band.
They wanted to have kids and he didn't maybe and he's on tour.
With the hippie girl. That was really funny.
That was funny when she said,
"Yeah,
who is Heidi in a hat?" I loved that.
And then, like, called her a hippie and, like, hung up on him.
But, like, bartender, I'll have what she's reading. I'm like, that is just not funny in, like, any universe for a show that is so funny. And if a man came up to me, even a man that looked like that, and said that at a bar, I'd be like, pardon?
Yeah, absolutely not.
I also forgot that Miranda was an alcoholic. That was, like, such a left turn last season.
Yeah, that's right.
Why should an AA meeting?
That's right.
They put too much on Miranda last season.
I know. We like all forgot about the alcoholic plotline, which obviously made way more sense with Charlotte. Anyway, yeah. Miranda was giving everything last season. Carrie was just like doing nothing.
Carrie was grieving. I loved the end of episode one, where she wore the wedding dress and she came out. That actually made me a bit teary.
Yes.
It was beautiful.
And now, then she said something, what was the line? And it's like, kind of makes you feel like last season she was in this grief bubble. It wasn't completely Carrie. And now she's like back. But then Aiden returns, which I'm like, I'm quite excited about this season. Aiden, fucking Samantha. Same.
Yeah. Aiden, yeah, it's exciting. One other thing I will bring up, and I thought this to myself, and then I went on TikTok and saw it, and I felt very validated, was there's this sloppiness to the show that bothers me, where Harry says, something, my mother, and she's been dead for 10 years. And I said, no, she hasn't, because when you and Charlotte got together back in whenever the hell it was, 2002, he said to her, my wife needs to be Jewish to make my mother happy. And then Charlotte's like, oh my God, another monster mother-in-law. And then he said, I promised her before she died. And Charlotte goes and the music rings in her ears and she's so happy that Harry has a dead mother.
That's like, right.
We all know that. Like, how can you as the showrunners not know that when you're putting that in the script? These are the little details. SJP has such attention to detail. I'm like, how did she miss it?
Yeah. I guess
not her job.
She hasn't watched the show.
And she wasn't in that scene.
She hasn't seen the show.
Care. But yeah, there is this like element of sloppiness to it where it doesn't the fans love it so deeply and so much. And it's like, feels like the show doesn't love itself as much as the people who are watching it.
Yeah.
And that's why storylines like the Charlotte being an alcoholic storyline and the anything that like Chelsea and Lauren suggested in their predictions all was so much better as storylines than what they ended up doing.
It's still so like fucking insane to me that those girls aren't in the writer's room.
Same. Outrageous.
Because yeah, anything they suggested would have been. Also, did you read in the piece like the only way and just like that happened was because Sarah Jessica Parker was messaging Michael Patrick King about starting a Sex and the City podcast. I mean, it was before Every Outfit had launched theirs, but I was like, it just wouldn't have even. What I was thinking was really funny about it was that even if SJP launched a podcast, it wouldn't have been as good as. It wouldn't have been as good or as popular as Every Outfit.
As good or as popular, literally, yeah.
Yeah, love, love, love. Very excited for what's to come. Must dash, though. I've been drinking this hideously warm vino, glass of wine.
What's Vino Bianco?
Time to go for a little swim. Classic freelance fashion. Have too much, so much work on, and it's just not even a fun, chill holiday.
I know. Never ends, does it?
Never ends.
We shouldn't have to work.
I never put an out of office on either. It's my own fault, like, ever. Because I, like, just don't think people are going to email. And then people email and I'm like, well, I better get back. Okay, bye.
Bye.
Bye. Bye.
See you on Patreon.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. Start getting your best night's sleep in these sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. Try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee. Plus, get 15% off your first order at bollandbranch.com. Code BUTTERY. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
Hey y'all, Darius Rucker here. You know, a lot of people ask me, what inspires your music? And one of the big things is a strong sense of place. That's why I love my home state of South Carolina and want to share the awesome things it has to offer. From the beautiful mountains down to the sunny coast, it's got it all. Not to mention two of my personal favorites, great golf and amazing food. Come see why I love this place. Visit discoversouthcarolina.com.